is Ms. Leslie Mickelson. Ms. Mickelson is the Managing Director of the Prevention Institute. She develops and directs all the programs related to creating healthy and fit activity environments. She will speak to us on the food crisis in the United States.
Welcome to my food world. I live in Berkeley, California, and we have the most amazing set of farmers markets, just like this one, 3 days a week. I am now getting the most fabulous food I've ever had, despite being a native Californian. And if I'm tired after a day's work, I can go to plenty of restaurants like this one, Soup, and to get takeout that's made with this organic, fresh, healthy food. But of course, my food world is really not our food world. And when I travel around the United States, it's much more typical to see scenes like this, or this, or this. Okay. I have to admit the drive-through whiskey was a little bit unique, but certainly alcohol outlets are not. And really what we have around the United States is frighteningly a two-tiered system of food. And in fact, as this study by Moreland really well documented, we have incredible inequities in access to food. So if you compare these columns, guess which is the low-wealth neighborhood and which is the high-wealth neighborhood? Well, indeed, we have high-wealth neighborhoods with many more supermarkets, and we have low-wealth neighborhoods with many more bars and taverns. And the inequity is really not just about the access to the outlets themselves, but there is also food prices tend to be higher. And of course, with escalating food prices now, it's going to get even worse. And there's real differences in quality, and these go across not only class lines, but also ethnic lines in this country. And for example, African-American neighborhoods, Latino neighborhoods, will often report poor quality of food in their local outlets. This is not the only thing that's out of whack with our food system. I actually spent some time in Missouri this fall, and at the risk of sounding like a presidential candidate, let me tell you about Rich, a farmer I met in Missouri. Rich told me this story that I still can't quite wrap my brain around. But basically, last season, he decided to grow white corn that actually was corn that people ate. It was made into tortillas, mostly exported. And he got a contract from the local grain elevator to deliver this corn at the end of the season. Well, the crop failed. And this was a problem all over this region of the state. This white corn was just not making it. He had to pay that contractor money at the end of the season, despite the fact that he had not received a cent up front. And this was not covered by our federal crop insurance. So he learned his lesson, and this year he's growing waxy corn, which he called food grade corn, but I have to tell you, the only one eating that corn was his dog, who went into the field 5 times while I was there and grabbed out ears of corn. In fact, what this food-grade corn is for is producing cornstarch, and it's used in a filler in all the many processed products we have, you know, that are really filling our marketplace, all the prepared foods, the cereals, etc. That's really what our farm policy is supporting, like these highly advertised products to kids that were featured in our Where's the Fruit study. There's more out of whack with our food system. Rich's wife called this their $200,000 house. What is it really? It's a harvester combine, which cost, in fact, by the time he negotiated the contract, $220,000. We have a highly industrialized system of agricultural production in this country. And that is costing us not only in terms of our nutritional health, and I feel that's often what gets the attention is the nutritional health, but it's also really costing us in terms of asthma and in terms of cancers and also birth defects. All of this is associated with the chemicals, fossil fuel-based chemicals, pesticides, fertilizers that are put into our food system. And the fact that we have concentrated animal feeding operations that are also polluting our air, water, and soil, and that we have food being transported 1,500 to 3,000 miles by diesel truck, which is really contributing to this air pollution. So this is another way we have a real crisis in our food system. And I would be very remiss not to mention that perhaps the greatest tragic irony of all in our food system is the fact that our farm workers, who we depend on to harvest our fruits and vegetables, are the poorest people in this country, and in fact have astoundingly high rates of food insecurity and are not able to buy the food that they are growing. One study done in Fresno, California found 51% of farm worker families were food insecure. Again, a real imbalance in our food system. And this is costing us all these different aspects of the food system, the nutritional aspects and the environmental aspects are costing us in terms of increase in healthcare expenditures. And what's amazing when the cause of increase in health expenditures over the last 20 years or so was evaluated, 15 diseases are really accounting for 56% of the expenditures. What does that mean? It's mainly diabetes, heart disease, cancers. It's all the diseases associated with our industrial food system. So what do we do about it? Well, the solution is not so simple. Last year I was in France and was in a blockade. I waited 3 hours on the road to Paris because the agricultural truckers were really upset about the rise in gas prices. This is putting an incredible squeeze on them. So they basically, their solution was, hey, lower the gas prices. Well, it's not that simple. We have to think more holistically. When we think about the challenges facing our society, rising healthcare costs, climate change and other environmental degradation, and an economy that's no longer supporting our community residents, well, we have to think then also about multifaceted solutions that are really at the intersection of health, the environment, and equity for all. And I do think that public health plays a unique position in really being able to step back and highlight the importance of the intersection of these three approaches. And one effort that's underway that Prevention Institute is helping to support is the Healthy Eating, Active Living Convergence Partnership of funders. These six funders came together, and now the Kresge Foundation is also growing this effort, to really look together at how do we create healthy food and physical activity environments. And their focus is really recognizing that there's a need not only to be multi-field, but to really address equity, to address sustainability. All of those are important. And we've produced for them a promising strategies document. And shortly, we'll be producing a healthy food brief. And my co-author, Linda Schack, is in the back of the room to really start to lay out what the strategies are. Because there's a lot of work that's been going on around this country in forging a healthier food system. So I'm going to just share with you a few highlights from this report. Expanding healthy food retail. What you're going to see that's common in all of these recommendations is this investment in infrastructure that a few of the speakers have mentioned. There is going to be an economic stimulus package. There is going to be government money spent. And what we need to do is really highlight the kinds of investments that are going to yield the greatest benefit, not only in terms of jobs, which certainly retail does, but also in the public's health. There's some great examples. For example, Retail Chicago has an effort, City of Chicago, to really help retailers go back into underserved neighborhoods, to help them find sites, to expedite the permitting, which we all know can be a nightmare. There's also been public investment, and Pennsylvania has really led the charge here with their fresh food financing initiative. Since 2004, they've put almost $40 million into getting 50 food stores started in neighborhoods that didn't have them. And these healthy food retail is not only providing access to healthier foods, it's also a way to really reinvigorate and revitalize neighborhoods. Another important issue is strengthening regional food systems and sustainable agriculture. This past Farm Bill saw an unprecedented involvement of public health professionals in really advocating for better food systems. Any of you who were deeply in the trenches know we didn't get all the wins we hope for. But we do have a really great platform for what's needed. And this work, I should also point out, can be done at the state and the local level. And some of the key issues here, and you'll find these outlined in our report, are preserving farmland, investing in new and emerging farmers. We are losing our farmers as fast as we're losing our farmland. And really using public dollars to support the infrastructure that's needed to help small and mid-sized farmers get their food from where they're growing it to the market. And the other valuable role of government, and actually there's a county in Iowa that's done this, and there's a few other states looking at it, is incentivizing more sustainable production. And one of the key starts for that is really getting out pesticides, hormones, and antibiotics out of the food production system, except when absolutely necessary. And so, for example, the Woodbury, Iowa passed a policy where they're trying to purchase, as a government agency, foods with those characteristics that are grown in a sustainable manner. And that's actually been the spirit of the Healthcare Without Harm campaign. And this national campaign uses the power of hospitals and healthcare institutions as large purchasers to really start to shift the market. And a real breakthrough for them has been thinking not only about the nutrition of the food they're providing in their health institutions, but also laying out some parameters in their procurement policies for more sustainably produced products as well. We've talked a lot about the economic crisis. There's going to be huge pressure in this country on families, and the federal nutrition assistance programs are really our primary way of addressing hunger and lack of access to healthy food in this country. And all of us are going to need to fight for those programs. We know they're going to be attacked. Food stamps, WIC, school meals, school breakfast, child care food program. We're going to really have to protect and preserve those programs and make sure that all the families that are eligible for them get them. I also do want to mention child nutrition reauthorization is coming up. We expect it to be next year. And that is going to be an opportunity to actually make improvements to these programs, particularly the child meal programs, and to really bring in more healthy, fresh food into those institutions through the regulations. Finally, I do want to highlight transportation reauthorization. This is critical for public health and, again, a huge federal expenditure. I think it's the sixth largest expenditure in the federal budget, and it is also an opportunity to talk not only about building communities that support support walking and biking, but really where food fits in that equation, getting people to food and helping with that distribution from farm to retail. There's a real movement growing. I know some of the people in this room, the Healthy Eating Active community sites in California, have really been involved in starting to shift at a local level what the policies are. It's not easy work. It's not easy work at all. And I need to be re-inspired often. So I wanted to share with you a quote from Hank Herrera, who was involved in getting a Tops chain into his neighborhood, Upper Falls, in Rochester, New York, when that store had been burned out for ages. And this is what he said. Every time I go by that corner, I remember people saying, face reality. There will never be a grocery store there. And I smile. I mean, that's what keeps us going, that we can have success. We do have a lot of resources on our website. Most are available free. The textbook is for sale, about primary prevention across a host of health issues. And we're also very interested in getting folks in public health to sign on to really calling for public investment that is going to yield the greatest value. So I really appreciate being here to talk with all of you and look forward to working on this effort in the future. Thank you.
We have time for one question for Leslie, if you'd like to come to the mic.
Hi, Leslie.
Hi.
Good presentation. I'm Andrew Decker, Shasta County Health Officer here in California. And what I've observed about your first slide about farmers markets are very lucky environment, but ours are increasing. We're getting quite a few more, and we're quite happy with that, and also community gardens. But I have a health equity uncomfortableness with it because prices at the farmers markets for fresh fruits and vegetables and other products where we are is more than at, you know, Winco and Food Max and Costco, et cetera. And I just wondered if you could address that piece.
I sure can. I mean, I think there's two ways to get at it. There are some markets that are being subsidized. That has helped keep the prices down, and that's, again, where public investment is important. The other piece of this, and I forgot to say this, but it is really critical, is we really cannot solve poverty in this country through food policy alone. And I think we, as people in public health, feel very responsible, and this price differential is really challenging to see. I think by changing our federal farm policy, we can end up with sustainably produced food that's more affordable to the consumer. But the other side of it, and I worked for food banks for 10 years, is when people are coming to programs and their income is 74%, so 74% of the federal poverty threshold, so below poverty, we can't make up that difference just through food prices. We've really got to look at wages, we've got to look at health care, we've got to look at childcare and all the factors that are really pushing families into poverty. And one part of it is our federal agricultural policy and state and local that can help make some of this food more affordable. But we're also going to have to address, ultimately, income disparities in this country. So thanks so much for asking that question.
This concludes our session. Thank you so much. Remember, every year when we have the late breaker, it's always on Monday morning. Sometimes it's hard for us to get the word out, but look for us next year at 8:30 to 10 on Monday morning. Thanks a lot.